Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
Avalanches are an ever-present danger in the Swiss Alps, but string is a classic period of increased avalanche danger, which has been demonstrated most tragically in recent days, not far from where I am right now. As a matter of fact, I just returned from a hike near my village of Zinal and saw smaller avalanches coming down the mountainside. Last night, I had dinner with several German tourists who had witnessed an avalanche, which partially buried a group of skiers. Fortunately, they all survived. They were very lucky, indeed. The subject of avalanche safety is an extremely complicated one, and there is great difficulty in predicting where and when an avalanche will occur. Nevertheless, elaborate warning systems have been developed by the Swiss Snow and Avalanche Institute in Davos in the eastern part of the country, a place that I have visited twice with my geography students. There are a number of significant factors in evaluating avalanche danger. They include such things as the depth of snow, temperature, wind direction, type of snow, previous weather conditions, steepness of the slope, and the nature of the terrain. In the Alps, most of the avalanches begin their downward journey from altitudes between 1,800 meters and 2,700 meters and follow clearly defined tracks. There are many different types of avalanches, and they move from speeds varying from a few kilometers an hour to well over 200 kilometers an hour. They may start from a single point on the snow, or a vast slab may break away. Avalanches may be composed of dry snow that moves along the surface, or wet snow that flows across the ground like lava. Regardless of how they start or their form, avalanches are powerful phenomena of nature. They have destroyed forests, buried alpine villages, caused flooding from buried rivers, and killed many skiers. Mountain people often call avalanches the White Death, and with good reason. This spring, snow conditions in Canton Valais have already killed and injured a number of skiers who have taken to high mountain ski touring as a form of recreation. A father and son have died in the Grand St. Bernard region, as have five French skiers. The latest tragedy killed three German skiers in a remote area of the Val d'Anniviers region known as Nava Alp, which is used for cows in summer. In most cases, the skiers were equipped with devices that would locate them if they were buried, but this gives them a false sense of security. In the best of cases, helicopters arrive 15 or 20 minutes after a telephone alarm has been sounded. Most are dead after being buried for 15 minutes. In addition, the complex injuries that occur during an avalanche often wind up killing those who are dug out of the snow alive initially. Skiers must realize that touring in a region that they're not familiar with is extremely dangerous. The guide can warn that there's avalanche danger, but they cannot tell the skiers exactly where and when there will be an avalanche. What it boils down to is this: you cannot protect people from themselves.
Back in mid-February, voters in Canton Bern narrowly approved a proposal for the construction of a new nuclear power plant outside the city of Bern in a non-binding consultative referendum.
The new plant was to replace the aging facility at Mühleberg, a mere 10 minutes from downtown Bern. But that was before the nuclear disaster in Japan, and the last word has most definitely not been spoken. Switzerland has 5 nuclear power stations, accounting for 40% of this country's electricity production. Several of these stations are considered to be in need of renewal or replacement, and there were 3 construction applications pending at the Federal Energy Ministry. But following the disaster in Japan, all of these applications were put on hold by order of the Minister for Energy, Doris Leuthart, of the centrist Christian Democratic Party. In addition, a thorough review of Swiss nuclear safety standards has been ordered. Among the most disturbing facts that have emerged is that the risk of serious earthquakes in Switzerland was underestimated when the existing nuclear stations were planned and built. Since then, this country has been shown to be more seismically active and prone than previously thought. Meanwhile, in neighboring Germany, the government has ordered the shutdown of several of the older nuclear power facilities there, and there is equal concern about the safety of nuclear power stations over the border in France, although there the government continues a pro-nuclear policy. It's interesting to note that Switzerland's other neighbors, Austria and Italy, have no nuclear power production. If a vote on abandoning nuclear energy in Switzerland were held today, I would predict a clear majority in favor. But note that I said today. One of the cynical conventional wisdoms of politics is that the public has a short memory. Let there be no mistake about it. There are powerful commercial interests in continuing with nuclear power in this country, and they must be working overtime to come up with a public relations campaign that aims to assure us of the safety of nuclear power generation, at least in Switzerland. Meanwhile, some of the big political parties are keeping their heads down and are obviously reassessing their positions on the nuclear issue. Prior to the Japanese disaster, the right-wing Swiss People's Party was all in favor of continuing nuclear power generation. Doris Leuthart's Christian Democrats were cautious, but still more in favor than against. But this has now changed. Questioned about their positions now, the People's Party has taken a wait-and-see attitude, while the Christian Democrats are talking about the possible need to get out of nuclear power eventually. Even the pro-business radicals have been talking cautiously about the issue. The only parties that have been outspokenly and consistently against nuclear power have been the Social Democrats and the Greens, both of which have the abandonment of nuclear energy and the promotion of alternative energy as part of their platforms. Having said this, the Greens have been against the further exploitation of non-nuclear power generation for reasons of environment protection. The problem is, they want the cake and eat it too. This is not going to work, and I think it's time for them to review their own hardline position on this. One other thing seems clear to me. Anyone who would actively and unconditionally promote nuclear power generation in Switzerland right now is out of touch with public opinion and in urgent need of a reality check. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure.
Right now, less than 100 people are registered as residents of this village of Indemene, characterized by its stone and slate roofs, many, many years old. I have a special guide. He's Adolf Schalk. Al Schalk is an American journalist and writer who has lived in this village for many years and has actually written a history of the village. Al, we're standing right now on a narrow pathway, which at least at this part of town, the north side of town, is paved with stones mixed with ordinary dirt. And this has a great historical significance for this tiny village.
Yes, for many centuries, this little path was the only connection with the outside world. The people had to walk on foot for about 7 hours one way to reach the bottom part of the valley on the opposite side of the mountains here to Lago Maggiore.
Now, to give us some geographical definition, Indemene is right in the mountains, situated in a rather deep valley, almost equidistant between Locarno on the one side and Lugano on the other, roughly speaking. And I can imagine in years gone by, this place must have been terribly isolated.
It was, because the road to Indemene, the automobile road, was only built at the end of World War I, around 1917.
And this road coming up is really an adventure. It has a tremendous number of curves. I think you've counted them.
Well, there are about 250 curves, including a great many hairpin curves.
People didn't tend to do a lot of traveling here.
No, they didn't do a lot of traveling, but nevertheless, the postman went down to the village to collect the mail and bring it up here about three or four times a week.
Well, let's walk gratefully down the path rather than up it, Al. How old is Indemene? How old are the oldest records?
The oldest records go back to the 13th century, but it is believed that it is certainly several centuries older. The first settlers were presumably shepherds and perhaps hunters. And much later, there are legends that bandits who used to rob people on the main thoroughfares down in the valley used to come here and hide.
It would seem like a good hideout because it's highly unlikely that many people would be caught or found up here.
That's right. In fact, there is reason to believe that some people came here to escape military duty, but because in former times, the peasants had to serve in the armies of the many princes who were constantly at war.
Ciao, Tama.
Yeah, ciao.
Morgen.
Yeah.
A moment ago, we greeted some people in Swiss German. And that leads us to one of the unusual aspects of the modern story of Indemene. Half of the modern population of Indemene is German-Swiss. They weren't born here. They came here. What's the story? What's the reason?
Well, these are the so-called city dropouts or city refugees. Most of them are young people, but also a few older people who came here to seek alternative lifestyles.
We are thinking it is a good place for our children for learning the living and because there are no cars and they can live more in the nature.
Al and I have dropped in on Hannes and Andrea Weilenmann, and they're a German-Swiss couple who have lived up here for just under 2 years. Do the children enjoy it up here, do you think?
When I see the other children in the town, I must say yes.
We've come across walking through one of the few paths in the village here, and a herd of goats. Very picturesque, but I'm sure they weren't put here by Walt Disney. Al, what are these goats doing here?
Well, the young people from the city, the city refugees who have come to settle here, are now raising goats, whereas the former indigenous population, which is unfortunately dying out, no longer raise goats, but they're more interested in tourism.
So it's the alternatives, then, the social dropouts who've come back here to keep it going.
To keep it going and to live the life the people here formerly lived.
Are they successful at it?
To a large extent, yes. Ticinese no longer make goat cheese to the same extent as they did formerly. And so the older Ticinese are delighted, the young people are now making goat cheese.
I just realized I was turning around and looking here, we're at the very edge of the town. I mean, it literally is the edge of the, not only the town limits of Indemene, but also the Swiss frontier with Italy.
Exactly.
We can see the customs house right here.
That's already Italy.
It doesn't look logical to me. Is there any good reason?
Yes, there is. In 1515, the Confederates were more expansionist-minded than they were today, and they had many battles and conquered a lot of territory south of here, all the way down to Domodossola.
That's in Italy.
Yes. They were mainly fighting the French. They lost the battle at Marignano near Milano. And because of this defeat, they had to give up a vast area, either here, this valley, or in the area near Mendrisio. And then they had the choice, and they said, well, Mendrisio has a lot of vineyards. However, here, there are a lot of chestnut trees. Well, we have enough chestnut trees, but we don't have enough vineyards, so let's give up this area, and let's keep the area with the vineyards. And then the people from Indemnity says, oh no, we have the right to stay here within the Swiss Confederacy because there are documents to prove that we belong to the Diocese of Locarno. And this protest by the people of Indemnity was accepted, and so for that reason the border was drawn illogically across this area here.
European history can be very quaint indeed.
Yes. Passeggio senza documenti.
Grazie, buongiorno. We just asked if we could pass for a moment and go walk into no man's land. In fact, it's a strange border crossing here, Al. We are standing directly on the frontier between Italy and Switzerland. There's only a plaque here on the road saying that you're on one side or the other, but the customs posts are actually a couple of hundred meters on either side. In the past, Al, there must have been a lot of smuggling going on here in the days when it was really worthwhile.
Well, the people of Indemnity mostly smuggled during the two world wars, when the men were not able to go out as guest workers because for centuries the living here was so hard that the men had to go out as guest workers to earn a living, and sometimes they were away as long as 10 months in a year.
What did they smuggle mostly?
They smuggled mostly cigarettes and liquors, and in fact, when there was a shortage, rice.
And the border crossing is not 24 hours here. You better be, if you go over on the other side, you better be back by 9 o'clock in the evening.
9 o'clock in the evening or after 7 o'clock in the morning.
Al, let's take two or three steps over the imaginary line separating two countries back into Switzerland.
Okay, we've been abroad. Let's go back to Switzerland.
We have a little bit of a snowfall. We're recording this in the month of November. And yesterday when I came up, it was very warm, sunny, very mild, southern climate, Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. Now things have changed and we have some snow flurries.
The real snowfall doesn't really start until the middle of January.
Does it really get cold up here in the winter?
It sometimes does, but on the other hand, that again is unpredictable.
The car that just went by has license plates from Varese. That's the province on the Italian side. There seems to be a lot of cross-border traffic here, certainly from the Italian side to the Swiss.
That's true. That's because the gasoline is cheaper in Switzerland than in Italy.
And they come over and just fill up.
Yeah.
Why did you come to Indemnity, Al?
Well, I guess I'm a dropout myself. I'm a journalist by profession, and I got tired of the hectic life and the requirements of journalism, and I decided to come here to live in peace and quiet. Now I'm more of an all-around freelance writer.
It would seem to be a perfect atmosphere for that kind of work.
It is if your temperament is suited for it, but not everyone can stand the silence.
I went to an art school in Zurich. I visited the art school for 2 years. I was going to go into textile design, but could not finish off because I felt it would become too boring. I didn't find it would become a job I could practice for a longer period of time.
Hans Peter, or Ami Amacher, and his wife Ruth. How do you survive economically up here? How do you keep busy?
I guess you'd say I'm a one-man construction company. I do roofs of the houses. I did my first stone roof or slate roof this year. Most of the work I do is for the tourists that come from the German-speaking part, which makes me sad because the locals don't seem to trust somebody that comes from the German-speaking part. There's a big gap.
Would you describe this situation as almost hostility? Is that too much?
That's too much. But I had often the feeling that I'm not allowed to walk around here and to be here. it took a long time to get rid of that.
Do you have any real dialogue with the people here? Do you get involved in conversation with the locals? Or is that even possible?
Real dialogue, I think I have with one woman who is not accepted from the other locals. She is a local herself, and she is not accepted from the other ones. And this situation makes that she looks for strangers as we are to talk with. But with other people, it's not possible.
It seems that you're all individualists, but you have one problem. All of these individualists have come together. Is it difficult to get along with each other? Because you are individualists by nature, you would like to be alone.
In general, I'd say yes. We have difficulties getting along with a number of people, but there's another point. Most of the people that came here, most of the people I knew or I know that came here, came as singles or as couples without children. And the fact that there are so many children here now could form a community or could start a better communication between those individualists who are here for egotistical reasons, thanks to the children, are starting to communicate in another sense.
Al Schalk, as we've been doing this program in Indemene, we've heard the so-called alternative life seekers, or as you call them, the city refugees in this hamlet or tiny village of Indemene. And I've had the feeling myself that to a certain extent we've heard only one side of the story, and we tried to get the other side of the story, for example, from the mayor of the town, and he refused flatly. We've even had a certain amount of hostility in doing this reporting work among the, let's call it, the alternative community itself. What's the problem up here? What's going on? What is the story behind the story?
Well, I think you have to understand the psychology behind the whole thing. Of these people have had bitter experiences, and they feel their whole lifestyle threatened. They feel like strangers in their own village, because German is spoken almost as much, if not more, than Italian. And many of the city or urban refugees do not bother to learn proper Italian. There are conflicting interests. The native people, to a large extent, have lived in dire poverty in former times, and now they see the chance of prosperity. So their interests are more in the direction of tourism and prosperity. The refugees, the outsiders who come here, are looking for the exact opposite, so there's a clash of interests.
You were here before the city refugees came on the scene. How do you feel about this whole phenomenon yourself, having seen it all develop?
Well, my feeling is that the people we have here now, the alternatives we have here now, are on the whole a wonderful group, with some exceptions. And I think there is a tremendous potential for a good working symbiosis. I think it will require a great deal of patience, a great deal of goodwill, and I think that some of these young people really are trying very hard to cooperate. I think the most important thing is that Indemene must, by all means, keep its genuine character and not lose its the qualities that have made it what it is. I think that's the most important thing. At the same time, we must provide enough jobs for the people who are living here to make a living without destroying this character, because I think Indemene is more close to Bethlehem than it is to Disneyland.
Al Schalk, American journalist and writer and long-term resident of Indemene, thank you very much for the tour of this unique Swiss mountain village.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.